in the family and at work. Rabbi Orlowick.
For men.
Now, you'll see you have the same piece of paper that the women are going to get. It's just one side says women, the other side says men. So, all right. We're doing the men's side. Okay? Defining wisdom. Okay, I'm going to speak quickly. The people here have questions. I'd much rather respond to your questions on anything. I'm glad you showed up. Understand? So let's try and personalize it as much as we can. Defining wisdom is the ability to understand priorities and the ability to understand function. Wisdom is knowing what's important and what's more important. And wisdom is to understand what is something for. What's its purpose? Being able to define the purpose of something. Like, what is my home for? What am I doing here? Like, what's my function? Once you understand your function, then you understand what your priorities are. It's like, but this is Torah, okay? The first is from Rabbi Abba Berman. The second is from my Rebbe Zichrono Livracha. Redefining when necessary our definition of manliness. We grew up in a society where manliness has certain definitions. For instance, the ability to earn a good living. Yeah? I hope you won't take this the wrong way, but I say the difference between the United States and Israel is in Israel, if you don't have money, you're a poor man. In America, you're not a man. And this is, what are you worth? What's your worth? So that has two definitions. Worth. But if the first thing that comes to mind is a dollar sign, so then, problema. It's a problem. So sometimes a person, a man, will feel stress because he thinks that he's not manly enough. He's not succeeding as a man. He's not doing his job. He's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. And that's all based on his definition of what manliness is, and that's what's causing the stress. So sometimes you have to redefine your definition of manliness. What will determine success at work? What will determine success at home? We said yesterday that a home is defined as a base medrash for chesed. Am I successful or not in my home is dependent on how many people benefit from me. It doesn't mean that you're a nobody. Hopefully you married an adult, and hopefully your children are being raised to be considerate on some level of others, including you, on some level. So it doesn't mean you're just, giving out and not getting anything. But the getting is incidental. Hopefully things will work out. The giving, that's my business. A doctor, he treats a patient. His definition of success is, did the patient get better? Did he do the best he could? Did he solve 50% of the problem? Not did the patient say, doc, you're the greatest. It feels good. Maybe because a person gives him energy to go on or whatever. But that's not how he's going to define success. He's going to define success as, did I do my job? You're a car mechanic. Does the car work now? Whatever it is, there's a bottom line. Well, the bottom line in the house, are you about chesed in your home? And once things are clear of what my definition of success is, so my stress level is going to go down. Because it's very clear to me how I measure what I have to do. Stress often comes from just being scattered all over the place. You're not allowed to look on the other side. Okay. You're not allowed to look. Say, when I would tease my wife, I'd say, don't come in the kitchen now. Okay? So you understand what that means?
Question
here? Sure.
Back to number two, when he says, redefining our definition of manliness. You said what it wasn't, but you didn't say what it was.
Okay, that's very, that's a good point. A man is someone who sets a tone in the house, who creates an atmosphere in the house and gives direction to the home. That's what a man is. Yeah? That, now, to a great degree, especially in young families, that has to do with setting the wife's tone. The wife's mood, the wife's feeling of being accepted, because then she passes it down. You know, a good general isn't somebody who knows how to march them on the parade ground. He knows how to get a good sergeant. And since he's not going to do that, maybe he's not, maybe, you know, I was in Detroit. So Baruch Hashem, most doctors, pretty much all doctors I know, I know them socially, yeah? So he once told me, this guy doctor is Dr. Weingarten, he's a doctor in Detroit. He said if he had a serious medical problem, he would go to the head resident in the Midwestern hospital. Because in the East Coast, you're just a number. Or in Houston, you're just a number. And this guy is on the cutting edge of what's going on now. And maybe you agree, disagree, that's what he told me. The chief resident, he knows what's going on, he knows the latest. Yeah, the professor who the ear, nose and throat specialist has not seen a normal sore throat in 25 years. He only gets those esoteric things. So he knows to delegate. You know, okay, you know, these things you take care of. So, but the responsibility, so therefore your wife might be the one who implements the atmosphere, who makes the atmosphere work, but then you create her atmosphere. Is this clear? But the bottom line, my definition for manliness is, what does your realm look like? The Medrash says that in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, no one was allowed to smile. You just didn't smile. Because maybe you were laughing at him. I was on this Midwest Airlines flight from Milwaukee to here. There's no congregating in the front of the plane for security reasons. You know, people who are planning to do something usually do it together. Okay, see, no congregating now. Okay, how effective that is, I'm not sure. But the point is, in a dictatorship, you can't have 10 people can't get together. Someone once wrote, how is it that 10 Germans were able to control 20,000 Jews? So one of those 20,000 said why? You weren't allowed to speak. If you said a word, one word, you got a bullet in your head. So that means with no speech, there's no communication. So you have 10 Germans with submachine guns against one Jew. But that's pretty heavy odds. Everyone was an individual. So a dictator sets the tone. In Stalin's time, you know, Russia was a depressed place. When I was in Russia, I asked permission. Can I say Stalin, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro? Am I allowed to say that? Even me, American, his spirit is hovering over here somehow. You understand? So, the atmosphere in your home, the direction in the home. If I had to point to one of the finest moments in my life is when my son said to me, Tati, one of the things I learned most from you is Hakara Satayf. I never said a word to him about it. About nothing. I'm not saying I'm right, but I don't preach to my kids. I don't give them muster. I'm not saying I'm right. Okay, I don't know. But, you set a tone in your house. Allow 24-hour delay in Toronto because I didn't go to Johannesburg. I was supposed to go, have a day off in Israel and then go to Johannesburg. But that day was eaten up in Toronto with a 24-hour delay. Would have been going to Johannesburg as soon as I get off the plane in Tel Aviv to go to be something I never thought I'd ever be, a transit passenger in Tel Aviv. Understand? I never saw anyone walk to the transit. Never. No, not from America. Yeah? So, they had 50 boys gathered for Shabbos because they were expecting me to come. So, but I didn't show up. So my son spoke instead. He says, my tati was here. He speak about a karsatai. That's something you teach a child. That's a tone in the house. It's a priority in the house. To me, if your child is a grateful person, he'll have a good life. Well, you have to, you know, people like grateful people. And you have a much better life when you're grateful also. So, a man is someone who sets the tone, atmosphere, is it a secure place? Now, this could be taken too far also. I grew up in a house where I knew exactly how much was in the bank or wasn't in the bank and how much we owed the grocer. So in my house, I make sure, be'ezus Hashem, that the kids don't have to worry about money. Like I don't own a car, you know. I live on what you would call a low standard of living, even though I don't think it's a low standard of living. But my kids don't think about money. Do we have enough? Yeah? Well, that's a goal that I have, because everyone has that. The way they grew up will affect how what kind of parent they're going to be. So to me, that's a priority that a child should not think about money.
How do you do it if your child is not going to go to Orlando for Pesach for 8 days with Disneyland and OU action? Aside from the Mashkafa, it's like we don't do vacations like that.
We have enough money for the things that we need. We don't need this. There's a book called Rabbi Yaakov put out by Art Scroll. You know, my definition of successful life now is you get an Art Scroll biography. That's, you know. Okay. So there's a book called Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. That book is a Bible. I've read it again and again. There's nothing near my Rebbe Winter said, and he was my Rebbe's Baal Eitzah. Rav Henkin was his Paisik, and Rabbi Yaakov was his Baal Eitzah. It says over there, you should get the book and read it again and again and again. I have, you know. And my book is all, you know, with checks and exclamation points. It's all, you know, I can tell you, come on, what's on every page. Within a few pages. I'm mamish, it's amazing. And he says over there, he never told his children they can't afford anything, that they can't afford something, that it's not necessary. We don't need it. Do we need it? You live a certain lifestyle. However, if you don't take your kid to Orlando, he has to have a father. He has a father who plays Monopoly with him, who takes him to Coldwater Canyon, to Laurel Canyon, takes him on drives, goes takes him to the Pacific Coast Road. There are places to go here. A person wants his father more than he wants things. He may grow up in a place which says, if you have this, you'll be happy. Or he'll see other kids who have things that he doesn't have. But you know, he has things that they don't have. Right. Yeah. In 1961, I saw the world premiere of The Alamo on Carthay Circle. I assume that there's a movie house there. At least there was 45 years ago. It was a very, very wealthy family where I was staying for Hanukkah, because I was the only one in the yeshiva who wasn't going home. It was not a happy place. It wasn't a happy place. I didn't think I was losing out, you know, by not living in that house. If you have less things that people in your world have, then you have to have more something else. A kid can't feel that he's deprived. So you give them more of you, but you tell them they can't afford it. We can't afford it. We don't have the money for that. That's okay. But it's very important. When you tell a child something, it's not the message that you give, the words that you say, it's the emotion by which you say it. We don't have it, I'm sorry, we don't have the money. We don't have the money, I'm sorry. Yeah? So then already, you know. Do you understand? It's always like that. When you're in a dangerous situation, you can describe to a child that something is dangerous and they will not get freaked out if you're calm. So it's how you say something, and it's much more important than the content of what you're saying. It could be you can't afford it. Could be, yeah. So, but are you happy with your life? Do you have a meaningful life? Is there simcha in your house? Because if there isn't simcha in your house, and you can't afford it, so then you have an 0-for-2 count. Because the kid's going to say, whatever my abba was and wanted and did, I'm not interested. Because not it was a happy place, and not that we have the things that other kids seem to have. So it's in different parts of the world, you need to be a better parent in different things. So in Los Angeles, you have to be a parent who's happy. It's much harder to live in a city where people next door or down the block have a lot of money, and you don't. You know, where I live, you understand, I don't owe money. You know what that means? It means I'm a rich man. You understand? Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. I'm a rich man. So is that the definition here of a rich man who doesn't know? He has no money in the bank, and he makes ends meet, and he doesn't owe any money. Now, that's a lot. It's called rich man here also.
In a certain, well,
not my
worth. What?
You get a net worth.
I feel like I'm a rich man, and that's the plain truth.
State of mind.
It's the reality. You look around, the neighbors, you know, how much money they owe. Yeah? You don't owe money. Do you know what that means? Not to owe money? It's like, the bank sent me a statement telling me I have a 5,000 shekel credit line that I never asked for. And they cover checks because it's understood you're going to be in an overdraft. The country lives in an overdraft. Even though now they changed the law, but I don't know if you read about it, didn't read about it. But it's not the pshat that you can't have an overdraft anymore. You have to plan your overdraft. You can't just have it. You have to go to the bank goes through your situation, and then decides how much credit they'll give you. Now I'm sure they have things called credit in the bank here also. Yeah? But like over there, it's a way of life. You can't make it any other way. So it depends where you live. Right? Some people, it's other things. Some people, it's social. My wife grew up on a block where there were no Jews. There were no Jews. Say she had to travel 40 minutes to school every day, to Breuer's. But she knew that me and Timothy, that, you know, she'd nobody on the block that she knows. That's a different kind of existence. Someone asked me a shayla about Chol of Israel for his kids. In the city he was living in, he should not make his child keep Chol of Yisrael, in my opinion, because all the other kids are eating Hershey's Kisses and eating Carvel ice cream, and this 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 8-year-old can't have it. So it's every place is different. But the main thing is you have to be happy with who you are and what you're doing. Okay? So that's my definition of manliness. Thank you for calling me on that. Yeah. So what will determine success at work is the bottom line. Do your patients get healed? Do you make sales? Yeah. Do you bring in customers? Whatever it is. On a ben adam l'makom level, between man and God, are you airless? Are you honest? Do you work 60 minutes out of an hour or close thereof, which is what's expected of you? Your boss understands he works 58 minutes out of an hour. That's very good. And what will determine success at home? The definition of what I need to do will lower stress. Because my path is clear. Remember we said, well, I don't expect you to have been here last night, but we said peace of mind is the ability to push away all the conflicting and competing things in your heart to focus on this one thing. Well, when you know what your function is now, yeah? Now I don't know how I'm going to get home from London on Tuesday. There's a boycott of El Al. And I always travel a lot. Even if you think it's more expensive, I travel a lot. For various reasons. But I don't know how I'm going to get back, but I'm not thinking about that now. Obviously, I am. But the point is, that's the example that comes to mind. Right now, I'm doing this. Because my function here is to give the people who actually came, yeah? To give them they should be happy they can, should get something out of it. That reduces stress. I know I have to do this. A surgeon, you know, he knows he has to do this, and that's all. The primacy of the home, Reb Chaim Vital. If you've heard me speak different times, I've mentioned this. My own personal proof that Torah is min hashamayim, that Torah is of divine origin. Now I understand you all understand what Torah min hashamayim means. But there's a fellow over here who's listening to every word I'm saying and recording it in his hard drive. And he may not know what Torah min hashamayim means, whoever might be listening to this. So therefore, I try and translate it. That's the reason. How do I know Torah is of divine origin? Because Reb Chaim Vital writes, this is in Reb Shlomo Volber's Hadrocha for Chassanim. I never saw it in the original, but it's probably in Reb Chaim Vital's Sefer. He's the chief student of the Arizal. He said, a person can do charity their entire life. Learn Torah. Do chesed with the world. But if he consistently hurt his wife, nothing will help in the day of judgment. Nothing will help. He can give charity, he can visit the sick, have a whole long list of things. Nothing will help if you consistently hurt your wife. Now, to me, a male wouldn't have thought of saying that 400 years ago. A woman who was listening to her. And only a divinity, only the Rebbe Hashem would come up with that. But you have to know that your din, my Rashi on that, is my commentary on that, is because who we really are is how we are at home. And that's the truth. You're going to have to wait a very long time to see Rabbi Rolovich lose his temper. Because I'm Rabbi Rolovich, can't lose my temper. You understand? But at home, I'm not. Taking quiet time between transitions. We all need reminders of three times a day paradigm of prayer. Why is poor? The Kuzari says, why do we daven three times a day? It's like breakfast, lunch, and supper. My stomach will forget breakfast in a few hours. I need a reminder. It needs to be refilled. That's what davening is. Davening is a reminder of the truths of life. Well, we all need reminders. So right before you come into your house, we said this yesterday, you come into your house, you stop and remind yourself what you're supposed to be doing. Why am I here? What's my function here? What's going to be the definition of success? What's needed now? When I come home, my wife has to know I'm happy to see her. My wife has to know I'm here to be a listening ear to something on her mind. That's what I'm here for. But you have to remind yourself that before you walk through the door, because we tend to forget. We all need to project what's coming up. We've said this. Stop and project. Don't be sold on your picture. Supper may not be ready. Your wife may be, you know, out of sorts. The kids may still be up and running around. Yeah? Rav Blazer Hamburger, who was Rav Miller's right-hand man for 50 years, yeah? Someone here? Oh. Who was Rav Miller's right-hand man for 50 years. Rav Miller used to say, when you walk into your house, no matter what you see, don't say anything. He said, someone came in the house, there was a flood on the floor, and she was mopping up, and said, what is this? She picked the mop up and threw it at him. Now, that couple did get divorced. I'm sure that's not the reason. But the point is, whatever it is, I'm here to listen, to be of help, but not to, no comments. No advice, no comments, no impressions, just be quiet. We need to reaffirm what is important to us in the long term. Okay? You have to know that a mature person sees himself on a continuum of past, present, and future. And therefore, how I behave now has to do with where I want to go. Okay? Giving headspace. Headspace is Dr. Mary Dvorah's words. She's a therapist in Hamilton. She's my wife's Rebbe. For 15 years, she trained her in therapy. And amazing lady. So that's her word. Her word is headspace.
What's your name?
Mary DeVore. She was in Hamilton, Ontario. And I have told people to move to Toronto in order to be in striking distance of her to fix up their marriages. People have driven from down south. I'm not talking about Rhode Island. Yeah? To have sessions with her. And it's amazing. It is too far for Los Angeles. Yeah, it's certainly not a drive. But, you know, you can't have everything. But amazing person. She uses the word headspace. She's 79 now. Yeah? Headspace means I empty myself out to let you in. Where I am now, what's on my mind now, is not what's important. I give you the space in my head. You can, and my commentary on that is you can think about how you feel, how the person feels, but you can't do both at the same time. Which you, this is a lot of this is, I guess, you know, we said over Shabbos if you were there. Stress is a source of marital discord. So now here we have to take a look. What the stresses are coming from. The stress that's intrinsic to the relationship. She's loud. She whines. She gets upset. She gets nervous. She gets bent out of shape. And you're the kind of person that's like, you know, please, just don't chat. Don't get bent out of shape. Or she's a person who takes a long time to say things. She says, you know, she uses many words. She's at this point in time instead of saying now. And she speaks and goes on and on and on. And she really, it takes her a while to get to the point that you're the kind of person like, just say what you want to say. It's okay. Someone says, at this point in time, it's always irritating. Why don't you just say now? Oh, you know, five times, at this point in time. Well, yeah. That's in nature. There are people who are on time. Now, I asked to be picked up at 20 to 9 this morning. As Rabbi could tell you, after I met him after Shacharis. Yeah? 20 to 9 is plenty of time. I had to speak to a chassan in Manchester. The last part of the chassan shmuz I gave him. And I was a little late. Which means I left at 8:45, 9:10. To be here at 9:15, that's plenty of time. And I was here early. Because that's my nature. My nature is, you leave early. Yeah, I'm going to an airport. You know, my father used to say, I'd rather wait for somebody than have somebody wait for me. Quote, end quote. But there are people who are not like that. They are constantly behind. You know, this Jewish standard time business. You know, I still believe the wedding invitations and when the chuppah is going to be. Now that's a pathology already. Like, something's wrong with me. I still believe it. And it's like, you know. That's intrinsic nature. A person, there are people who are fastidious. They're neat. And there are people who are not, their mind is not on it. Their mother wasn't like that, etc. It doesn't have to be, by the way, be extremes. It could be just a little bit, and it could be annoying. That's one kind of stress there could be. The standing on one foot solution is that you have to talk to each other. You have to talk to each other and understand where the other one is coming from and that they're not you. And that they're not you. Sometimes it means that they grew up in a different kind of house. I always tell over the Maisa that there was a guy who used to get up and help his wife. Wash the dishes. This obviously is a very old story because he would wash the dishes. Yeah? And whatever he would take out, he would sweep. And she'd always criticize what he did. And it was a bit annoying until they did something very unusual. Well, they spoke about it. And it turned out that she came from a home where her mother, you know, ruled the roost. And she was a perfect balabusta. And everything was always shining. And he never did anything in her house. In his house, it was the opposite. So, oh, that's why. From outside situational factors, sometimes there are health problems. Do you know mononucleosis has a side effect of depression? People who have mono are more likely to be down. That's biological. It's physical. It's not emotional. There are people who have health challenges. Sometimes it's financial challenges. Sometimes it's in-laws. That's 7B. There are outside things that shake the... that shake the relationship. And you have to talk about how to deal with those outside things. Sometimes you have to move. That's true. Sometimes you have to move. And sometimes people come in with a thing called baggage. Experiences previous to the marriage, youth, other relationships. I know of a husband who caught his wife talking to her sister about her old boyfriend. It's not a smart thing to do. Not for her to speak about it, not for him to catch her. Do you understand? You know? So, there are things that happen beforehand. Whether they're... trauma is too strong a word. There are things that are experienced that people go through and they have likes and dislikes based on that. So, stress can come from one of these three things. Isolate which one it is and deal with it. A lot of the treatment is isolating the reason. Sometimes a person needs to go to help. That's okay. That's fine. But a lot of the work is done if you can figure out where it's coming from. You've cut out a lot of the therapist's work if you can figure out where it's coming from, but this is a cause of stress. Stress comes from something that's happening to you and you don't know what to do about it. You can have people who are trained. They can be in the most stressful situations, but they're not nervous. Why? Because they know what to do. You know, if you have a pilot, you know, and you know, the plane's going like that. Yeah? So, hopefully he has his seatbelt on. And he knows what to do in order to straighten the plane out. Maybe he has to, you know, I don't know what he has to do. But everyone else is nervous, not because just because of the experience. The pilot's going through the same experience. But the pilot knows what he has to do, so he's not stressed out. And children is a source of stress. Now, everything else, there's at least like 30,000 words here, it's all in invisible ink. Tell me, how can I be of help to you?
Can I just make a comment?
Sure.
As a rheumatologist, you know, I'm in the business of, unfortunately, you know, giving people little doses of pain on a very frequent basis.
Right.
So, a lot of those people are stressed out, some of those people aren't.
Right. Dentists have the same thing.
And it's very similar. And one of the things I tell them, I say, you're stressed, I understand. If we're both stressed, then you're in trouble. I said, I'm not stressed at all. This is going to, you know, this is going to be over in less time than you.
Right, that's right.
Hopefully that's calming. I don't know if it is or not.
Yeah. It is calming. I'll tell you why it's calming, because when you feel that you're in someone's hands, that someone's taking care of you, yeah? So it's a calming effect. I was having dizzy spells 2 years ago, and I was finally, everything checked out okay. I finally, there was a very, very great cardiologist named Alan Weiss in St. Louis. So he came to the house where I was in St. Louis, by a different cardiologist, and he was coming. Yeah, it's okay. I said, look, that's my cardiologist, I'm sorry. Yeah. And he reproduced the dizziness, had me blow into a paper bag. Yeah. In a few seconds, is it the same dizziness? I said, yes, you don't sleep enough. You don't sleep enough. I started sleeping, the dizziness went away. Yeah? But the feeling of being in this man's care is total trust. Yeah? He's totally capable. He's the one who Rabbi Yoshev relied on to have his operation 2 years ago. Yeah? I watched him check Rav Shach and say, this man has a strong heart. When someone's 95 and you say he has a strong heart, you have to know what you're talking about. Yeah? You know, that's a bad guess. I mean, he takes care of Yoshev and he takes care of Kulitz. So, the couple, that's the Ovino Malkeinu. He's very capable and very benevolent, and I felt very secure, and I have been working on trying to transpose that feeling to God. You understand? So, when the person is there, is taking care of you, and you're confident that he knows what he's doing, yeah? It's like before an airplane flight, so they said over the PA system, we find a disagreement amongst the computers about what's going on in the engine. So we're being delayed. Like, why'd you tell me that for? You expect me to step forward and say, oh, I can help you. Or there's certain airlines which just say, I'm not going to knock in public anymore. That said, you know, we have a faulty door. We asked the FAA for permission to fly with a faulty door, and they said no. So we have to wait. You ask the FAA for permission to fly with a faulty door? I mean, maybe my head is too Talmudic. But they're giving full disclosure. You ask the FAA for permission to fly with a faulty door? That doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. Okay? So, yes, there's a book called Blink. And it's a very nice book to, yeah? I'm extremely instinctive. In a few seconds, I have a feeling about something, and it's usually accurate. I told it over to this Mary DeVore, yeah? And she said, get this book, read this book. It's an amazing book. Yeah, Alan Mazansky told me, that he lent me his copy. It traces the ability of a person. This is not supernatural. Yeah? The person has the ability in a few seconds to get a very accurate reading. They did a study in the clinic in Cook County in Chicago about doctors' diagnosis. It's unbelievable. The point that I'm trying to bring out is they had film clips. Insurance companies had film clips of who would you pick to sue? Which doctors are most likely to get sued? They wanted to figure out the insurance company. It turned out 10-second clips. A high degree of accuracy between the experts and just laymen. The doctors that took an extra few seconds. It was a question of like 30, 40, 60 seconds difference. So if you have any questions, at the end of the examination, I'll be happy to answer your questions. These people had a much lower rate of being sued than the doctors who were efficient and cold and technical. Okay? This is a feeling of security. That's right. Yes?
Back to the convention about stress and not knowing what the source of stress off and not knowing what to do.
Right.
So I think it might be helpful for this community, certainly myself included, that many times because of our past, we may live in a situation where we are, I don't know about constantly, but certainly long term out of depth in many, many areas. And it's a chronic situation almost, and you can identify, I'm out of my depth, and I realize where it comes from, and yet that may not necessarily reduce the stress.
For the last 2 decades, I've been teaching counseling to people going abroad, going to the United States or whatever. And if one of the first things I said to them, liaison, you have to have somebody to talk to. If a person is in a life situation where they're constantly out of their depth, either they have to change their life situation. I you should no longer masquerade as being a surgeon. Okay? Like, stop now. Okay? So either you change your life situation or you liaison. You have to have someone who you can talk to, assuming that you have to do what you're doing. Yeah? A rabbi gets many questions in many cases that he, you know, he's out of his depth. You know, I have two things about, you know, one of the ways I measure a doctor, if a doctor is a good doctor or not, is, does he know how to say, I don't know. Will he refer you to somebody, a specialist, and say, you know, I can't handle this? You know, rabbis are the same thing. Can they say, I don't know? Can they say, you need someone else? You know, I can't help you. But sometimes, even if you're in, I don't know, Oklahoma City, yeah, and you are the top authority, yeah, so then you have to have a telephone. And you have to have a telephone. You have to liaison. And that, on this is said the rule, you do the best you can. And if there's a busy signal and you can't get through, you have to make a decision. Yes?
I have a business that there's like many, many employees, and like there is so many lawsuits. They sued me, and I'm suing people.
Yeah, it's Minig America to sue, right?
And yeah. A lot of people run away, then there is the insurance problems, there is employment problems, there is so many things just attacking. And many times I make a list, there's like maybe 50 of them, and then I even forget to read that list. I mean, I get so busy that I forget to look at the list. So what's your suggestion?
Is that your function in the business, to keep track of all the problems and who's suing and who's not suing?
Yeah.
That's your function.
I'm the owner, yeah. I'm running everything. So
Okay, so running everything, I want to give you, this is Sfasemus, I think. The word Adon means master. Master, the word for master in Hebrew is Adon, or Adon, Adon Olam. It comes from the word Adon. Adon is the sockets in the tabernacle which holding up the beams. And Adon is someone who's at the bottom and holds everybody else up, not who's on the top and watching everything. You need to be able to find and pay money for someone who you could trust and who has good eyes. And it free you up. See, because the function of an owner is to make money, is to make deals, to make contacts, to I don't know what your business is, but to show people how, you know, it's worth buying from me. It's worth dealing with me. Not dealing with problems. You hire a lawyer, or you hire a legal student who can tell you, you know, what's going on. You don't have to keep tap of every little thing. I deeply believe that all elementary school teachers in the younger grades, from like second grade and down, should be know enough about learning disabilities to be able to say, this is a Shaila, and send it to somebody. But you don't have to be a learning disabled. You don't have to be an expert in special ed. But you have to know enough to say, hey, this is a question. Yeah? If your wife comes to you and says, a clean, cold, fleshika spoon fell into a clean, cold, milcha kapat. Okay? So you don't have to call a rabbi. That's a Shaila. It's not a Shaila. Yeah? It's okay. Yeah? Your level halacha is to know what's the question. So you have to hire someone who can know what's the question. But you should have to spend your time figuring out, is this a question or not? That's too much. Yes?
I just want to share something. Someone told me once, and I've used it so often, and thank God for 4 great kids who I just love so much. And he said to think long term. And that sounds like something you see as just one of your talking points here.
Yeah.
But to put that into action and really think long term, how does this fit into the scale, the continuum of the greatest simcha in the world and the greatest tragedy in the world? Where does it fit in on that continuum? And to think long term helps you get over the immediate stress of the situation. And I think it's just a great piece of wisdom.
Okay, so let's try and bring it more down to earth then. Okay? You know, wisdom is called the ability to see the future. What does it mean to see the future? So that means to see the future and pull it into your present. Okay, that's what it means. Because we live according to what's in our present, not what's in the future. So there are a few ways you could do that. One is by taking a look at people who lived a certain way and made certain decisions 20 years ago and see what they look like today. And I don't mean necessarily negatively. Yeah? You have Rabbi Kahn. Rabbi Kahn is a very, very, very intelligent man. Okay? He could have done, I know him for a very long time. 25 years, 30, 20, close to 30 years. I remember in yeshiva, he was tops. Yeah? And what he doesn't tell you, you know, he says, oh, I was his student, and I should have stayed in Eshet longer. He doesn't share with you is that my 16 years in Eshet Torah was because of him. Because my first year, the Shia wasn't so good. I had to lower my level of Shia 3 years in a row. He saved me. He said, him and someone else named Ian Slew, who lives in London, they said, no, he's a good teacher. He's okay. He's good. Yeah? Nobody else thought so. Okay, so it's just we should know there's another side to the coin. Okay? So, you know, Rabbi Kahn is quite an intelligent person. He could have done a lot of things with his life. Okay? He's a happy person. Has a meaningful life. He means something to people. People come and talk to him, and you know something? The older he gets, the more valuable he's going to become. When is he going to retire? When did Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg retire? When does Rabbi Noach Weinberg retire? The older you get, the more you're worth. Do you understand? So you take a look at this person, and you say, you know, I'd like to, what were the choices that he made? Okay, you know, it's there's a Jew in Beit Vagan who was offered a contract from the Baltimore Orioles. Yeah, Reb Leib Hyman was offered the Baltimore Orioles contract, and you see the way he's built, you can believe it. But instead he went to learn by Rav Aaron Kotler. He went to learn by Rav Aaron Kotler. Yeah? And, you know, today we wouldn't have it, you know, if he had played in the Orioles, and we're going back like 55 years, yeah? So then, you know, where would he be today? Who plays for the, played for the Orioles 55 years ago? Who, like, you know, you understand? The highest rate of psychological problems are retired athletes. They have the greatest drop. Last year at this time, the crowds were cheering for me. And now, like, who are you? And 2 or 3 years later, you know? Okay? So that's the kind of choice. That's one thing you could do. Look at people's life choices. Another thing that you could do is take the time every day. Some people call it Limud HaMusar. I'm not going to put any label on it. To stop and reaffirm, what is my definition? What are my goals? Eshet Torah and Stephen Covey have two very similar exercises. Eshet Torah has an exercise, at least years ago, I don't know if they still use it, what would you want on your tombstone? If you had to make an inscription on your tombstone, what would you write? And Stephen Covey has, you're walking into a funeral and sitting yourself down and you're listening to the eulogies. What would you like for them to say? It's your funeral. What would you like them to say? It's the same thing. It's the same exercise. Yeah? So you stop and you reaffirm, what is it that I want to be remembered for? Yeah? Will this lead me to that goal? Or will not lead me to that goal? It's not morbid. Yeah? With a child, you think about what does this child need, not what I need. Children love their parents. Children care about their parents. You have only one father. Now, you can squander your capital, it's true. It's doable. Last year I had a shaila. One of the rabbis in the yeshiva came to me and he says, there's someone, quite a famous person's child went off to derech and went to yeshiva in Yerushalayim, really did well. Black shirt, white shirt, black pants, yeah? Finished Masechta, really doing well. And then his parents came to Israel, put on jeans, wore his hair down, came to them without a yarmulke, no brachas, nothing, deposited them in their hotel, and came back to the yeshiva, got redressed, yeah? And told this Rebbe, don't you dare tell them that I made a siyum.
What?
Don't you dare tell them that I finished the Masechta. Don't you dare tell them. I don't want them to have any nachas. It's pure revenge. But that usually doesn't happen.
That's so rare.
Yeah, well, it's hopefully rare. You stop and you think, what's good for your child? Now, you know something? You're going to be wrong sometimes. Yeah, you're going to be wrong sometimes. But most of the time, when you're dealing with someone else's problem, you're less wrong. Because it's not your problem, it's their problem. Yeah? There are many doctors who don't treat their own children, even though you probably do. Yeah? But a lot of doctors, especially has to do with an internal disorder and there's a diagnosis and things are less clear, you want someone else to come and look at the kid. Because it's my kid. I know it's like to teach my child, it's hard. Yeah, but when you look at the child, what does the child need, not how I feel, you're more likely to be right. So those are some. So you look at the child, see what that child needs. You'll end up okay. You may have a few, you know, dented fenders, but you'll be okay. Yes.
This book, who's the author of it?
I don't remember.
And you started to say what it was about, but I didn't catch it.
The ability, people have an ability to, in a split second, because of a feeling they have, yeah? They had the book starts off with a kuros. A kuros is an ancient Greek figure that was being sold to the Getty Museum for, I think, $30 million. And they sent it to a laboratory that they found dolomite. It takes thousands of years to dolomite to form. And everything was, it was like really classic and perfect. And someone saw it and says, it doesn't feel right. They sent it to Greece. And the experts looked at it for a split second and said, something's wrong. And then they found out that dolomite can be formed with potato starch if you leave it under a few months. And they found some fraud, in the invoices and the mailing addresses that didn't exist on the date that it was supposed. It was a few seconds. It was all the painstaking laboratory things. And an expert looked at it for a few seconds. He doesn't know how he knows it. We call it Bina. My Rebbe Zichron Levracha said Bina is like a calculator. It gives you the answer, it doesn't tell you how you got it. Yeah? He brings down there someone named John Gottman. I don't know if you're familiar with that name. Gottman. He is a guru on marriage therapy. He's an Orthodox Jew. Yeah? He's a very famous man. If you know somebody who knows someone who knows someone who knows how to use internet, yeah? So you type out Gottman, you'll get reams and reams of papers, of sheets on it. And Gottman, John Gottman, he could tell in a few seconds from looking at a couple are they going to get with a high accuracy what their chances of getting divorced. Just by looking at them. Now he's already figured it out and printed out to a science how he knows. Because you step back and you think about it. But that's that book. You shouldn't think I read all these, I only read it where I can't learn, and it takes me a long time. But I was told by enough people to read the book, so I did. Anything else? Children, is this? Yes. Yeah, no, go ahead. All right.
In all the
opportunities
that you've given
me,
I think
you've
been able to
give me
the right in our particular situation, we're down to one boy and one girl in the home, and this boy has two older brothers who are out of the home. And by the time he gets home from a long day at the shiva, I mean from work, we both feel kind of tired, and it's very hard to engage beyond, how was it today? Fine.
How old is he?
This boy is 14.
Okay, it's late, but I always say that the only thing I can prescribe without going to jail is Mozart. And I have one with me, actually now it's in South Mansfield. And you heard it last night, yeah, on the treadmill. That's my Mozart diskette, one of them. Yeah, you sit in your car for a couple of minutes and decompose. Decompose is the wrong word.
Decompress.
Don't decompose.
Thanks for that correction.
Yeah. And stop and focus about what's important. Learn to stop and relax totally. Almost to the point of sleep. If you need to go, have someone teach you how to breathe. And say for the next few moments, for the next 15 minutes, I'm really going to care about where my son is and how his day was. 15 minutes is what they call in the Talmud, waters that have an end. In other words, it has a limit. There's an end. It's not forever. And take the time but I'm telling you now, 14 is very old. He's already used to a certain pattern of behavior. And I would start off by asking him how his day was, and when he says okay, you start telling him how your day was.
I should tell him how my day was.
Yes. Anything that's too untoward, so you leave out. Yeah? But if he's interested in listening, if he's interested in hearing, and then eventually he'll start doing it for you. Yeah.
So how much do you push, like, in that situation, if, you know, if Jesse is done, you know, how was your day, and he gets a grunt?
Yeah, don't push. Don't push.
I don't push, but I feel like he's becoming more and more distant.
He is. That's because he is.
He's lonely at the end of the day, and I want to connect with him.
What's, after he comes home, what's the rest of his day look like? It's open time, it's free time.
It's 8:30, he
has homework.
His homework.
Has homework, yeah.
And then he'll do something on the computer for a little bit, that is a little bit relaxing time. It's a long day. He's doing great at school, but I feel he's becoming more and more distant.
That's right, of course he is.
He is.
Is there something that's interesting to him that's also interesting to you that you can do together? For instance, yeah, study graphology. Kids are, it might be dangerous. The kid might think he knows how to analyze handwritings if they're two quick, easy lessons. Or do something together that you both like to learn how to do. Maybe go once a week for a karate lesson. The point over here is that it's something he wants to do and you would like to do if only you had the time. Yeah? Go for an advanced swimming lessons. The kid likes to swim, so go together for a course where you can do, to learn more different strokes. Of course, it can't be something that he's way head and shoulders better than you in. But even that, I was once, my son was in, he was a little young, I think he was 12, 11. All he wanted to do was go to the Belzer Tisch. That was in Chova Griperstein, it was about a 20-minute walk from our house. Now, when I got to the Belzer Tisch, like a good Litvak, I sit on the side and go over the parasha, learn Mishnayos, and suffer the indignities of Reb Noach! I didn't know you were a Belzer! You understand? I need a quick run up onto the Paranchis, these little bleachers that they got, and listen to and do the singing. And I wasn't afraid of him becoming a Belzer Chassid for two reasons. One is, if he becomes a Belzer Chassid, it's fine, it's not the end of the world. And second is, I knew he wouldn't anyway. Okay? But, I would be able to live with that. Yeah? So we had the walk there and the walk back. And that was it. That's what he wanted to do. So find something he wants to do. Now, in computer games, so maybe, he'd probably be better than you, hands over, in any of these things that, even the kosher ones. So I wouldn't get into that turf if he's, they have different kinds of...
We talk about sports. All my boys love sports.
Okay.
We talk about sports, but that only goes so far.
I know a person in Yerushalayim who I've told, he has to be well read on sports page, because that's the only connection he has with his father. There's nothing else in their lives that intersect except sports. So he has to read the sports page. As part of his kibbutz, to read sports.
Yeah.
I know someone whose father follows their town's college basketball team around the, it's regional college basketball. It's the Southeast. So this man is in love with that basketball team, and that's their point of contact. So, now, I would tell you to go to a baseball game, but I don't know what baseball games look like anymore. Okay? If there are any sneers issues. I know there are sneers issues with watching a baseball game. The only television I saw, I had 60 seconds of television in the last 3 or 4 decades. I was in a room, and there was a baseball game. I said, so terrible. The advertisement came on.
Yeah.
And my gosh. It was not Sanua. Yeah? So, I have no idea what baseball stadiums are like. Yeah? But it's something that you're not allowed to do, Which you'll, it's the rough, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. But let's say, it's mutter. So get a good seat. Yeah? Get a guy. My brother told me he knows a taxi driver in New York City who owns a box seat behind home plate in Yankee Stadium. I forgot to tell me how much money it costs. It costs a lot of money. It costs thousands of dollars, that seat. Thousands of dollars. So I'm not saying you should spend that amount of money, but if you're going to go, if you're going to a baseball game, don't go to the bleachers. Get them a good seat if you really want to go. If it's something that's, you know, means something to you. Find things that you could do together once in a while. Even once a month. The big rule is small change in the beginning is the harbinger of bigger change afterwards. You don't have to expect him to sit down on the rug with you and talk about the meaning of life for hours. It's not, you're not up to that yet. Anything else? Yes?
If you hear your friends are reading books like Harry Potter, and we ask around that, you hear controversial things about it.
And I opened up a Harry Potter because I have to know about these things. I actually opened a Harry Potter book. I forgot where I was. There's a Harry Potter book. I didn't find anything wrong with it. It's just stupidity. Yeah? But I didn't examine it with a fine-tooth comb. But I didn't see anything indecent there. It's probably a great boon to the world, to the non-Jewish world. It's probably raising kids' vocabularies. They're reading comprehension. I didn't find anything wrong with Harry Potter. Yeah?
I was just going to say that because I know a lot of parents whose kids fell in love with reading through Harry Potter.
Yeah.
You know, because the kids they're waiting for the next book to come out.
Yeah, I have no idea why. But, like, you know, I got white hair. What can I tell you? I have no idea. Well, like, you know. Can you read Tarzan books? That was what was in my time. Yeah. Edgar Rice Burroughs. Yeah. It was written in 1905, 1915. Mm-hmm. Tarzan and the Jewels of Opar. So it was Beatles man. But that's what I, you know.
Could they watch it?
Can they watch it?
The question is from, I heard 1, 2, 3, fourth and onward I've heard it becomes...
The medium of television, of visual entertainment, is bad for your kid. Even if it's Rav Shach talking. Okay? Talking, maybe not. Rav Shach playing basketball would not be good for your kids. And it trains the mind not to look at details. You want your child to read. He wants to know the difference between a P and a B. But for the first 4 or 5 years of his life, he's been trained not to focus. Television, and not just television, any films, train you not to focus. Because if you focus on any scene, then you lose the plot. Because this picture keeps changing. So you're taught not to focus. You're also taught the happiness of not thinking. Put pictures in my head. I was in a Midwest city several years ago, and I said to them, if you have a television, I can't help you. I can't help you. You can't raise kids today with a television. You just can't, it can't be done. And people were very angry at me. I think I was even sharper. I said, don't even talk to me. That was too sharp, maybe. Yeah. But there's nothing you could do. It's like you have a wound, and the doctor dresses it, cleans it out, and then you stick some mud on it before he closes the Band-Aid. It's like it's never going to heal. It's not shy. It's not. You can't have good kids today and have a television in your house. Even the news. There's a book called, one second, Laughing Ourselves to Death. That's worth reading. Laughing Ourselves to Death. You heard the book? Yeah? Do you know the news is entertainment? Because if it wasn't entertainment, it would not be on the, it wouldn't be on television. News is all tsaras. Forget about that. It's not true. It's all sheker. Everybody knows that the news is distorted. And I have nothing to... Without forget about Israel. Yeah? Thomas Jefferson said, the difference between he who reads newspapers and he who does not read newspapers is he who reads does not read newspapers is uninformed, and he who does is misinformed. Okay? The Briskerov said nothing is true about a newspaper except for the price on it, because even the date is wrong because it was printed the night before. Yeah? But the news is entertainment, yenim tsaros. The other people's tsaros, earthquakes, terror attacks, war, and you're sitting in your living room eating Dipsy Doodles and watching a 15-second film clip of It's entertainment. If it wasn't entertainment, it would not be on the screen. And in that book he writes, you know, there was a fellow named who wrote the Common Sense, Thomas Paine. So he sold what, 15,000 copies. It was like it would be like a runaway bestseller, a million copies. No, how many people ever met Thomas Paine? How many people, all of these thinkers, you know, how many people ever met Thomas Jefferson? No one met him. All I knew about Thomas Jefferson was what he wrote. So people, when they made judgments of who to vote for, so you based on what? The written word. That's who he is. Now, if you would have met him, you wouldn't have voted him for door catcher. If you really knew him, to ask his wife, yeah, what's he really like? Yeah? But he is his, today, it's not, you know, what image does he project? So the news is entertainment. And that's Roman already. When you sit in your couch and you watch the news from the comfort of your couch, and this is a non-Jewish book. It's not a Musa Sefer. So, it's malissimo. Yeah.
So there is not a metallic between TV and watching the something that you have under control once a month or twice a month?
Something you have under your control once a month, twice a month is not addictive. It would depend on where you live. You live in a place where everyone else sees something. So sometimes you need to, National Geographic. There are things that you can control.
The power of media could be used. Because
power of media could be used, but it's used as entertainment. Yeah? As entertainment form, it's bad for your child because it teaches him not to focus and not to think. There's one of the great ruinations of America is a program called Sesame Street. A teacher cannot compete with Sesame Street. He just can't. The kid's level of what it takes to stimulate him goes well. Once you've seen dancing elephants play to music, then like, what's the teacher going to do? And the computer programs that teach you things, teach you math, teach you language, they do it all right. It's full color. There's immediate feedback, immediate encouragement. Yeah? And it's well done. You know, teachers can't do that. Now, I'm not saying that if a child needs remedial help, that they shouldn't use a program. Yeah? I have to see the program. I have to have someone who knows. But generally speaking, these things lower the child's ability to focus on a human teacher. I tell teachers today they cannot talk for more than 7 or 8 minutes. They can't, because kids can't do it. They can't do it. And you can never sit at your desk. You have to float around the room. It used to be you have to touch a kid. You can't touch a kid anymore. Just to know you're here. That's all. You can't do it anymore. But there's no attention span, and it comes from visual entertainment. And the kids can't focus, and their parents want to know why. Once or twice a month, under control, theoretically it's okay. But you have to know these things have a way of ballooning out of control. It's better not to use it.
Trying to utilize it.
That's right. Reading is much healthier. For no, it's not the koach hamchasha. It's destruction of imagination. It's a destruction because this, you know, there was a movie that came out when I was a kid. Yeah. Yeah, called The Ten Commandments. There's an actor named Charlton Heston. So the kid, Moshe Rabbeinu is Charlton Heston. It's like an Israeli kid. Chashmal is that. When Chashmal is really the light around the heavenly throne. It destroys a person's imagination.
Discovery Channel has, for example, they have DVDs of each bodily function. How does the heart work? And they have made it in such an amazing graphic.
Exactly, and the teacher can't compete with that.
So even that should not be used.
If you're living in the hinterlands of West Virginia, and the kid is not going to school, it's an amazing gift. But you want your kids to listen to a teacher. Now, the truth is today, teachers have more and more to use media. But kids have no attention span. They have no patience. And you come to a thing called Gemara. You know? You understand? It's going to be hard. I know as a teacher I learned the hard way. I used to tell the class that this is a hard piece. So I think it means that they'll try harder. That's not what happens. They give up more easily. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
They give up more easily. When things become hard, so kids they don't have staying power. Yeah. As long as you're here, Rabbi, I'm continuing because you're going to let me know when I have to stop.
I see
the woman coming here, so we should really... Okay. Okay, come over. You have a question?
One issue on Harry Potter. What about the magic, this concept of everything?
You know, the Super Bowl keeps so many millions and millions of people out of trouble. Yeah. I can think of a lot worse things than Harry Potter. Again, my vast knowledge of Harry Potter is a couple of pages flipped here and there to see, you know, maybe some of the words I didn't understand even. Yeah, because I think they have their own vocabulary already. Well, they can think of worse things than Harry Potter.
My pleasure. Yeah.